Cassette 3, side B. I press play.
How many of you remember the Oh My Dollar Valentines?
How many of us would rather forget?
Those were fun, weren't they? You fill out a survey, a computer analyzes your answers, then it cross-references with the other surveys. For just $1, you get the name and number of your one true soulmate. For $5, you get your top five. And hey, all proceeds go to a worthy cause.
Cheer camp.
Cheer camp. Each morning over the loudspeaker came the cheery announcements. Don't forget, there's only 4 more days to turn in your surveys. Only 4 more lonely days until your true love is revealed. And every morning, a new peppy cheerleader continued the countdown. Only 3 more days. Only 2 more days. Just 1 more day. Today's the day!
For every foot of sidewalk I put between Tyler's house, Marcus, and me, the muscles in my shoulders relax a little more.
Then the whole squad of cheerleaders sang, Oh my dollar, oh my dollar, oh my dollar, Valentine. This, of course, was followed by whoops and hollers and cheers. I always imagined them doing kicks and splits and tossing their pom-poms around the attendance office.
I walked by the attendance office once on an errand for a teacher, and that's exactly what they were doing.
And yes, I did fill out my survey. I've been a sucker for surveys my whole life. If you ever caught me reading one of those teen magazines, I swear it wasn't for the makeup tips. It was for the surveys.
Because you never wore makeup, Hannah. You didn't need it.
Fine. Some of the hair and makeup tips were helpful.
You wore makeup?
But I only picked the magazines up for the surveys. The tips were a bonus. Do you remember those career surveys we had to fill out freshman year? The ones that were supposed to help us choose electives? According to my survey, I'd make a wonderful lumberjack. And if that career didn't work out, I could use my fallback career as an astronaut. An astronaut or a lumberjack? Seriously. Thanks for the help.
I don't remember my fallback career, but I got the lumberjack too. I tried figuring out why the test saw that as my best career path. True, I marked down that I like the outdoors, but who doesn't? That doesn't mean I like cutting down trees.
The Valentine survey was a two-parter. First, you describe yourself. Hair color, eye color, height, body type, favorite type of music and movie. Then you put a check beside your top 3 things you do on weekends. Which is funny, because whoever designed the list forgot to mention drinking and sex, which would have been the most accurate response for most of our student body. In all, there were about 20 questions, and I know, based on who appeared on my list, that not everyone answered honestly.
In the middle of the sidewalk, beneath a street lamp, is a dark green metal bench. At one time, maybe this was a bus stop, but now, it's just a bench to relax on, for old people or anyone too tired to walk. For me.
For part 2 of the survey, it was your turn to describe what you were looking for in a soulmate. Their height, their body type, if they were athletic or not, shy or outgoing.
I sit on the cold metal and lean forward, dropping my head into my hands. Only a handful of blocks from home, and I don't know where to go.
As I filled mine out, I found myself describing a certain someone at our school.
I should have answered my survey seriously.
You'd think that if my answers all described one person, that person would have at least appeared in my top 5. But that person must have been immune to the cheerleaders and their cheers, because he didn't end up on my list anywhere. And no, I'm not telling you his name. Yet.
For fun, I filled mine out as Holden Caulfield from The Catcher in the Rye. That semester's required reading and the first person to come to mind. Holden. What a horrible first date that depressed loner would make.
The moment the surveys were distributed in 3rd period history, I bubbled in my answers.
There sure were some weird names on my list. Exactly the sort of people I'd expect to fall for a Holden Caulfield.
It was your typical day in Coach Patrick's history class. Decipher a bunch of notes scribbled on the board, probably 5 minutes before class started, then copy them down in your notebook. If you finish before the end of class, read pages 8 through 194 in your textbook, and don't fall asleep. And no talking.
How was I to know every single one of those girls would call me? I assumed everyone at school saw the survey as a joke. Just a fundraiser for cheer camp.
After class, I walked straight to the student body office. At the end of the counter, closest to the door, was the drop-off box, a large shoebox with a slit cut in the top and decorated with cut-out pink and red hearts. The red hearts had "Oh My Dollar Valentine" written on them. The pink ones had green dollar signs. I folded my survey in half, slipped it into the box, then turned around to leave. But Ms. Benson, smiley as usual, was standing right there. "Hannah Baker," she said. "I didn't know you and Courtney Crimson were friends." The look on my face must have expressed exactly what I was thinking, because right away she backpedaled. "At least, that's what I figured. That's what it looked like. I mean, you are friends, aren't you?"
That lady is beyond nosy.
My first thought was of Tyler standing outside my window, and I was furious. Was he actually showing off those Peeping Tom photos to Ms. Benson? No. Ms. Benson told me she had delivered some checks to the yearbook room that morning. Taped to the walls were sample shots that might appear in the yearbook. One particular photo was of Courtney and me. You guessed it. The one from the party with my arm around her waist, looking like I was having the time of my life.
Quite an actress, Hannah.
I told her, "No, we're just acquaintances." "Well, it's a really fun picture," Ms. Benson said. "And this?" These next words I remember exactly. "The wonderful thing about a yearbook photo is that everyone shares the moment with you. Forever." It sounded like something she'd said a million times before. And before, I probably would have agreed. But not with that photo. Anyone looking at that photo would definitely not be sharing our moment. They could not come close to imagining my thoughts in that picture. Or Courtney's. Or Tyler's. Everything about it was false. Right then, in that office, with the realization that no one knew the truth about my life, my thoughts about the world were shaken. Like driving along a bumpy road and losing control of a steering wheel, tossing you just a tad off the road. The wheels kick up some dirt, but you're able to pull it back. Yet no matter how tightly you grip the wheel, no matter how hard you try to drive straight, something keeps jerking you to the side. You have so little control over anything anymore. And at some point, the struggle becomes too much, too tiring, and you consider letting go, allowing tragedy, or whatever, to happen.
Pressing my fingertips hard against my hairline, my thumbs against my temples, I squeeze.
In that picture, I'm sure Courtney was wearing a beautiful smile. Fake, but beautiful.
She wasn't, but you couldn't know that.
See, Courtney thought she could jerk me around wherever she wanted, but I didn't let that happen. I jerked myself back on the road just long enough to push her off, if only for a moment. But now, this survey for Valentine's Day, was this just another chance to get thrown off the road? Was this survey for the guys who found my name on their list going to be the excuse they needed to ask me out? And would they be extra excited about doing that because of the rumors they'd heard? I looked at the slit in the top of the shoebox, too thin to squeeze my fingers through. But I could lift off the top and take out my survey. It'd be so easy. Ms. Benson would ask why, and I could pretend I was embarrassed about filling out a love survey. She'd understand. Or I could wait and see.
If I had been smart, if I had been honest with my survey, I would have described Hannah, and maybe we would have talked. Seriously talked, not just joking around like last summer at the movie theater. But I didn't do that. I wasn't thinking that way.
Would most students, as I expected, get their list and just have a good laugh, thinking nothing of it? Or would they use it?
If Hannah's name and number had shown up on my list, would I have called her? I slouched down into the cold bench, leaning my head back. Far back, like the tip of my spine might burst if I keep going.
Very little, I told myself, could go wrong. The survey was a joke. No one's going to use it. Calm down, Hannah. You are not setting yourself up. But if I was right, if I called it correctly, if I willingly gave someone an excuse to test those rumors about me, well, I don't know. Maybe I'd shrug it off. Maybe I'd get pissed. Or maybe I would let go and give up. This time, for the first time, I saw the possibilities in giving up. I even found hope in it.
Ever since Kat's going away party, I couldn't stop thinking about Hannah. How she looked, how she acted, how it never matched up with what I heard. But I was too afraid to find out for sure. Too afraid she might laugh if I asked her out. Just too afraid.
So, what were my options? I could leave the office a pessimist and take my survey with me, or I could leave it as an optimist and hope for the best. In the end, I walked out of that office with my survey still in the box, unsure of what I was. An optimist? A pessimist? Neither. A fool.
I closed my eyes, concentrating on the cool air floating around me. When I went into the movie theater last summer for a job application, I pretended to be surprised that Hannah worked there. But she was the whole reason I applied.
"Today's the day," the cheerleader said, cheerfully, of course. "Pick up your Oh My Dollar Valentines at the student body office today."
On my first day at work, they placed me in the concession stand with Hannah. She showed me how to pump butter topping into the popcorn. She said that if someone I had a crush on came in, I shouldn't put butter in the bottom half of the tub. That way, halfway through the movie, they'd come back out asking for more. And then there wouldn't be so many people around and we could talk. But I never did that. Because it was Hannah I was interested in. And the thought that she did that for other guys made me jealous.
I hadn't decided yet if I wanted to find out who the survey matched me up with. With my luck, it'd be a fellow lumberjack. But when I walked by the office and found no one standing in line, I thought, what the hell? I went up to the counter and started saying my name, but the cheerleader at the computer cut me off. "Thanks for supporting the cheerleaders, Hannah." She tilted her head to one side and smiled. "That sounded dumb, right? But I'm supposed to say it to everyone."
It was probably the same cheerleader who gave me my survey results.
She typed my name into the computer, hit enter, then asked how many names I wanted, one or five. I placed a $5 bill on the counter. She hit the number 5 key, and a printer on my side of the counter spit out my list. She told me they put the printer on our side so the cheerleaders wouldn't be tempted to peek at our names, so people wouldn't feel embarrassed by who they got. I told her that was a good idea and started looking over my list. "So," the cheerleader said, "who'd you get?"
Definitely the cheerleader who helped me.
She was joking, of course.
No, she wasn't.
Half joking. I placed my list on the counter for her to see. "Not bad," she said. "Ooh, I like this one." I agreed that it wasn't a bad list, but not wonderful either. She lifted her shoulders and called my list a shrugger. Then she let me in on a little secret. It wasn't the most scientific of surveys.
Except for people seeking a depressed loner like Holden Caulfield. For that, the survey deserved a Nobel Prize.
We both agreed that two names on the list matched me fairly well. Another name, one that I was pleased with, brought an entirely different reaction out of her. "No," she said. Her expression, her posture, lost all of its cheeriness. "Trust me, no."
Is he on one of your tapes, Hannah? Is that who this tape is about? Because I don't think this tape is about the cheerleader.
"But he's cute," I said. "On the outside," she told me. She pulled out a stack of fives from the register, put mine on top, then went through the stack, turning each bill the same way. I didn't push the subject, but I should have. "And in a couple of more tapes, you'll know why. Which reminds me, I haven't told you who our main man on this tape is. Fortunately, this is the perfect time to introduce him, because that's exactly when he showed up."
Again, not me.
Something started buzzing. A phone. I looked at the cheerleader, but she shook her head. So I swung my backpack onto the counter, fished out my phone, and answered it. "Hannah Baker," the caller said. "Good to see you." I looked at the cheerleader and shrugged. "Who is this?" I asked. "Guess how I got your number," he said. I told him that I hated guessing games, so he told me. "I paid for it." "You paid for my phone number?" The cheerleader scooped her hand over her mouth and pointed at the printout. The Oh My Dollar Valentines. No way, I thought. Someone was actually calling because my name was on their list? Kind of exciting, yes, but kind of weird at the same time. The cheerleader touched the names we both thought were good matches, but I shook my head no. I knew those voices well enough to know it wasn't either of them. It also wasn't the one she warned me about. I read the other two names on my list out loud. It looks like you made my list, the caller said. But I didn't make yours.
Actually, you did make her list. A different list. One I'm sure you don't like being on.
I asked him where on his list my name popped up. Again, he told me to guess, then quickly added that he was joking. Ready for this? He asked. You're my number one, Hannah. I mouthed his answer, number one? And the cheerleader hopped up and down. This is so cool, she whispered. The caller then asked what I was doing for Valentine's Day. Depends, I told him. Who are you? But he didn't answer. He didn't need to because at that moment I saw him, standing right outside the office window. Marcus Cooley. Hello, Marcus.
I grit my teeth. Marcus. I should have hit him with the rock when I had the chance.
Marcus, as you know, is one of the biggest goof-offs at school. Not a slacker goof-off, but a good goof-off.
Guess again.
He's actually funny. An endless number of painfully dull classes have been rescued by a perfectly timed Cooley pun. So naturally, I didn't take his words at face value. Even though he only stood a few feet away, separated by a window, I kept talking to him through the phone. You're lying, I said. I am not on your list. His normally goofy smirk at that moment looked kind of sexy. What, you don't think I'm ever serious? He asked. Then he pressed his list against the window. Even though I stood too far away to actually read it, I assumed he'd only hold it up to prove that my name did in fact hold his top spot. Still, I thought he must have been kidding about getting together for Valentine's Day. So I thought I'd make him squirm a bit. Fine, I said. When? The cheerleader covered her face with both hands, but through her fingers, I watched her skin blush. I don't know. Without her as an audience egging me on, I doubt I would have agreed to go out with him that fast. But I was playing it up, giving her something to brag about at cheer practice. Now it was Marcus's turn to blush.
Okay. Well, how about Rosie's? You know, for ice cream.
E5. I saw that star on the map while riding the bus. I knew roughly where it was, just not which store specifically. But I should have guessed. The best ice cream and the greasiest burgers and fries around. Rosie's Diner.
My words came out sarcastic. Ice cream? But I didn't mean them that way. An ice cream date just sounded so cute. So I agreed to meet him there after school, and with that, we hung up. The cheerleader slapped her hands on the counter. You have absolutely got to let me brag about this. I made her promise not to tell anyone until the next day, just in case. Fine, she said. But she made me promise to spill every last detail afterward. Some of you may know the cheerleader I've been talking about, but I'm not saying her name. She was very sweet and excited for me. She did nothing wrong. Honestly, no sarcasm there. Don't strain yourselves reading into my words.
Before, I thought I knew who the cheerleader was. But now, remembering the day we all found out about Hannah, I'm sure of it. Jenny Kurtz. We had biology together. By then, I'd already heard. But that's when she found out. Scalpel in hand, an earthworm sliced down the middle and pinned open before her. She put down the scalpel and fell into a long, stunned silence. Then she got up and, without stopping by the teacher's desk for a pass, walked out of the room. I kept looking for her the rest of that day, puzzled by her reaction. Like most people, I had no clue of her random connection to Hannah Baker.
Did I tell the cheerleader about what had happened at Rosie's? No. Instead, I avoided her for as long as I could. And you're about to find out why. Of course, I couldn't avoid her forever, which is why in a little while she'll make another appearance on these tapes, but with a name.
The cold air isn't the only reason I'm shivering anymore. With every side of every tape, an old memory gets turned upside down. a reputation twists into someone I don't recognize. I felt like crying when I watched Jenny walk out of biology. Every time I saw a reaction like that, with her, with Mr. Porter, it threw me back to the moment I found out about Hannah myself, when I did cry, when instead, I should have been angry at them.
So, if you want the full Hannah experience, go to Rosie's for yourself.
God, I hate not knowing what to believe anymore. I hate not knowing what's real.
E5 on your map, sit down on one of the stools at the counter. In a minute, I'll tell you what to do after seating yourself. But first, a little background on me and Rosie's. I had never gone there before that day. I know it seems crazy. Everyone's been to Rosie's. It's the cool, quirky place to hang out. But as far as I knew, no one ever went there alone. And every time someone invited me, for some reason or another, I was busy. Family visiting from out of town, too much homework, always something. To me, Rosie's had an aura about it, a mystery. In the stories I heard, it seemed like things were always happening there. Alex Standall, his first week in town, had his first fight outside Rosie's front door. He told me and Jessica about it during our Monet's Garden Cafe period.
When I heard about that fight, it came as advice not to mess with the new kid. Alex knew how to throw as well as take a punch.
A girl whose name I will not repeat had her first under-the-bra experience at Rosie's while making out between the pinball machines.
Courtney Crimson. Everyone knew about that. And it's not like Courtney tried to hide it.
With all the stories, it seemed that Rosie turned a blind eye to anything going on as long as cones were being filled and burgers were being flipped. So I wanted to go, but I was not about to go alone and look like a dork. Marcus Cooley gave me the excuse I needed, and it just so happened that I was free. Free, but not stupid. I was a little wary of Marcus, a little suspicious, but not of him so much as the people he hung out with.
People like Alex Standall.
After peeling away from our Ollie Ollie Oxenfree group at Monet's, Alex started hanging out with Marcus. And after the little stunt Alex pulled with the who's hot, who's not list, I didn't trust him. So why would I trust someone he hangs out with?
You shouldn't.
Why? Because that's exactly what I wanted for me. I wanted people to trust me, despite anything they'd heard. And more than that, I wanted them to know me, not the stuff they thought they knew about me. No, the real me. I wanted them to get past the rumors, to see beyond the relationships I once had, or maybe still had, but they didn't agree with. And if I wanted people to treat me that way, then I had to do the same for them, right? So I walked into Rosie's and sat at the counter. And when you go there, if you go there, don't order right away.
The phone in my pocket starts vibrating.
Just sit and wait a little more.
It's Mom. I press pause. I answer the phone, but even the simplest words catch in my throat, and I say nothing. Honey, her voice is soft. Is everything all right? I close my eyes to concentrate, to speak calmly. I'm fine. But does she hear it? Clay, honey, it's getting late. She pauses. Where are you? I forgot to call. I'm sorry. It's okay. She hears it, but she won't ask. Do you want me to pick you up? I can't go home. Not yet. I almost tell her I need to stay till I'm done helping Tony with his school project. But I'm almost done with this tape, and I only have one more with me. Mom, can you do me a favor? No response. I left some tapes on the workbench. For your project. Wait, but what if she listens to them? What if, to see what they are, she slides a tape into the stereo. What if it's Hannah talking about me? It's okay, never mind, I say. I'll get them. I can bring them to you. I don't answer. The words aren't caught in my throat. I just don't know which ones to use. I'm heading out anyway, she says. We're out of bread and I'm making sandwiches for tomorrow. I exhale a tiny laugh and I smile. Whenever I'm out late, she makes a sandwich for my school lunch. I always protest and tell her not to, saying I'll make my own when I get home. But she likes it. She says it reminds her of when I was younger and needed her. Just tell me where you are, she says. Leaning forward on the metal bench, I say the first thing that comes to mind. I'm at Rosie's. The diner? Are you getting work done there? She waits for an answer, but I don't have one. Doesn't it get loud? The street is empty. No cars, no noise, no commotion in the background. She knows I'm not telling the truth. When are you going to leave? I ask. As soon as I get the tapes. Great. I start walking. I'll see you soon. I press play.
Listen to the conversations around you. Are people wondering why you're sitting there alone? Now glance over your shoulder. Did a conversation stop? Did their eyes turn away? I'm sorry if this sounds pathetic, but you know it's true. You've never gone there by yourself, have you?
I haven't.
It's a totally different experience. And deep down, you know the reason you've never gone alone is the reason I just explained. But if you do go, and you don't order anything, everyone's going to think the same thing about you that they thought about me. That you're waiting for someone. So sit there, and every few minutes glance at the clock on the wall. The longer you wait, and this is true, the slower the hands will move.
Not today. When I get there, my heart will be racing as I watch the hands spin closer and closer to Mom walking through the door. I start to run.
When 15 minutes are up, you have my permission to order a shake. Because 15 minutes is 10 minutes longer than it should take even the slowest person to walk there from school. Somebody isn't coming. Now, if you need a recommendation, you can't go wrong with the banana and peanut butter shake. Then keep waiting. However long it takes to finish your shake, if 30 minutes go by, start digging in with your spoon so you can get the hell out of there. That's what I did.
You're an ass, Marcus. You stood her up when you never even had to ask her out to begin with. It was a fundraiser for cheer camp. If you didn't want to take it seriously, you didn't have to.
30 minutes is a long time to wait for a Valentine's date. Especially inside Rosie's Diner by yourself. It also gives you plenty of time to wonder what happened. Did he forget? Because he seems sincere. I mean, even the cheerleader thought he meant it, right?
I keep running.
Calm down, Hannah. That's what I kept telling myself. You're not setting yourself up for a fall. Calm down. Does that sound familiar to anyone else? Isn't that how I convinced myself not to pull my survey out of the box? Okay, stop. Those were the thoughts running through my head after waiting 30 minutes for Marcus to show up, which probably didn't put me in a good frame of mind for when he finally did show up.
My running slows. Not because I'm out of breath or my legs are ready to collapse. I'm not physically tired, but I'm exhausted. If Marcus didn't stand her up, then what?
He sat down on the stool next to me and apologized. I told him that I'd almost given up and left. He looked at my empty milkshake glass and apologized again. But in his mind, he wasn't late. He wasn't sure I would even be there. And I'm not going to hold that against him. Apparently, he thought we were joking about the date, or he assumed we were joking about the date. But halfway home, he stopped, thought about it, and headed to Rosie's just in case. And that's why you're on this tape, Marcus. You turned around just in case. Just in case I, Hannah Baker, Miss Reputation, was waiting for you. And sadly, I was. At the time, I just thought it might be fun. At the time, I was stupid.
There's Rosie's, across the street, at the far end of the parking lot.
See, when Marcus came into Rosie's, he wasn't alone. No, Marcus came into Rosie's with a plan. Part of that plan was to move us away from the counter to a booth near the back, near the pinball machines, with me on the inside. Me, sandwiched between him and a wall.
The parking lot is nearly empty. Only a few cars directly in front of Rosie's, but none of them are Mom's. So I stop.
If you want, if you're sitting at Rosie's right now, stay at the counter. It's more comfortable there. Believe me.
I stand on the curb, breathing deep, exhaling hard. A red hand flashes at the intersection across the street.
I don't know how much of his plan was thought out. Maybe he arrived with just an endgame, a goal. And like I said, Marcus is funny, So there we were, sitting in a booth with our backs to the rest of the diner, laughing. At one point, Marcus had me laughing so hard that my stomach hurt. I leaned over, touching my forehead to his shoulder, begging him to stop.
The hand keeps flashing, urging me to make up my mind, telling me to hurry. I still have time to run across the street, jump the curb, and race through the parking lot to Rosie's. But I don't.
And that's when his hand touched my knee. That's when I knew.
The hand stops flashing. A solid, bright red hand. And I turn around. I can't go in there. Not yet.
I stopped laughing. I nearly stopped breathing. But I kept my forehead against your shoulder, Marcus. There was your hand on my knee from out of nowhere. The same way I was grabbed in the liquor store. What are you doing? I whispered.
Do you want me to move it?
You asked. I didn't answer.
I pressed my hand against my stomach. It's too much. Too much to handle. I'll go to Rosie's in a minute. And hopefully, I'll get there before Mom. But first, the theater where Hannah and I worked for one summer. A place where she was safe. The Crestmont.
And I didn't move away from you either. It was like you and your shoulder weren't connected anymore. Your shoulder was just a prop to rest my head against while I figured things out. And I couldn't look away as your fingertips caressed my knee and started moving up. Why are you doing that? I asked.
It's only a block away. And maybe it's not a red star on her map. But it should have been. It's a red star to me.
Your shoulder rotated and I lifted my head. But now your arm was behind my back and pulling me close. And your other hand was touching my leg. My upper thigh. I looked over the back of the booth to the other booths, to the counter, trying to catch someone's eye. And a few people glanced over, but they all turned away. Below the table, my fingers were fighting to pry your fingers off, to loosen your grip, to push you away, and I didn't want to yell. It wasn't to that level yet, but my eyes were begging for help.
I shoved my hands in my pockets, balled into fists. I want to slam them into a wall or punch them through a store window. I've never hit anything or anyone before, and already, just tonight, I've wanted to hit Marcus with that rock.
But everyone turned away. No one asked if there was a problem. Why? Were they being polite? Was that it, Zach? Were you just being polite?
Zach? Again? With Justin on the first tape, falling on Hannah's lawn? Then interrupting me and Hannah at Kat's going-away party? I hate this. I don't want to find out how everyone fits together anymore.
Stop it, I said. And I know you heard me because, with me looking over the backrest, my mouth was just inches away from your ear. Stop it!
The Crestmont. I round the corner, and less than half a block away, there it is. One of the few landmarks in town. The last Art Deco theater in the state.
Don't worry, you said. And maybe you knew your time was short because your hand immediately slid up from my thigh all the way up. So I rammed both of my hands into your side, throwing you to the floor. Now, when someone falls out of a booth, it's kind of funny. It just is. So you'd think people would have started laughing. Unless, of course, they knew it wasn't an accident. So they knew something was going on in that booth. They just didn't feel like helping. Thanks.
The wraparound marquee stretching over the sidewalk. The ornate sign reaching to the sky like an electric peacock feather. Each letter flickers on, one at a time. C-R-E-S-T-M-O-N-T. Like filling in a crossword puzzle with neon letters.
Anyway, you left. You didn't storm out. Just called me a tease loud enough for everyone to hear and walked out. So now let's back up. To me, sitting at the counter, getting ready to leave. To me, thinking Marcus wasn't showing up because he simply didn't care. And I'll tell you what I was thinking then, because now it applies even more.
I walk toward the Crestmont. The other stores I pass are all closed for the night. A solid wall of darkened windows. But then a triangular wedge cuts away from the sidewalk. Its walls and marble floor the same colors as the neon sign, pointing into the lobby. and in the middle of the wedge, the box office. Like a toll booth with windows on three sides and a door in the rear. That's where I worked on most nights.
For the longest time, from almost day one at this school, it seemed that I was the only one who cared about me. Put all of your heart into getting that first kiss, only to have it thrown back in your face. Have the only two people you truly trust turn against you? Have one of them use you to get back at the other and then be accused of betrayal? Are you getting it now? Am I going too fast? Well, keep up. Let someone take away any sense of privacy or security you might still possess. Then have someone use that insecurity to satisfy their own twisted curiosity.
She pauses, slows down a bit.
Then come to realize that you're making mountains out of molehills. Realize how petty you've become. Sure, it may feel like you can't get a grip in this town. It may seem that every time someone offers you a hand up, they just let go and you slip further down. But you must stop being so pessimistic, Hannah, and learn to trust those around you. So I do. One more time.
The last movie of the night is playing, so the box office is empty. I stand on the swirling marbled floor, surrounded by posters of coming attractions. This was my chance at this theater to reach Hannah. It was my chance, and I let it slip away.
And then, well, certain thoughts begin creeping around. Will I ever get control of my life? Will I always be shoved back and pushed around by those I trust?
I hate what you did, Hannah.
Will my life ever go where I want it to?
You didn't have to do it, and I hate the fact that you did.
The next day, Marcus, I decided something. I decided to find out how people at school might react if one of the students never came back.
As the song goes, you were lost and gone forever, oh my darling Valentine.
I lean back against a poster locked behind a plastic frame, and I close my eyes. I'm listening to someone give up. Someone I knew. Someone I liked. I'm listening, but still I'm too late. I press stop. My heart is pounding and I can't stand still. I walk across the marble floor to the box office. A small sign hangs by a chain and a tiny suction cup. Closed, see you tomorrow. From out here, it doesn't look so cramped. But in there, it felt like a fishbowl. My only interaction came when people slid money over to my side of the glass and I slid back their tickets. Or when a coworker let themselves in through the rear door. Other than that, if I wasn't selling tickets, I was reading. Or staring out of the fishbowl into the lobby, watching Hannah. And some nights were worse than others. Some nights I watched to make sure she buttered the popcorn all the way through, which seems silly now and obsessive, but that's what I did. Like the night Bryce Walker came. He arrived with his girlfriend of the moment and wanted me to charge her the under 12 rate.
"She won't be watching the movie anyway," he said. "You know what I mean, Clay?"
Then he laughed. I didn't know her. She might have been a student from another school. One thing was clear, she didn't seem to think it was funny. She placed her purse on the counter. "I'll pay for my own ticket, then." Bryce moved her purse aside and paid the full amount.
"Just relax," he told her. "It was a joke."
About halfway through the movie, while I sold tickets for the next show, that girl came tearing out of the theater holding her wrist, maybe crying. And Bryce was nowhere to be seen. I kept watching the lobby, waiting for him to show, but he never did. He stayed behind to finish watching the movie he had paid for. But when the movie was over, he leaned against the concession counter, talking Hannah's ear off as everyone else left. And he stayed there while the new people came in. Hannah filled drink orders, handed out candy, gave back change, and laughed at Bryce. Laughed at whatever he said. The entire time, I wanted to flip the closed sign over. I wanted to march into the lobby and ask him to leave. The movie was over, and he didn't need to be here anymore. But that was Hannah's job. She should have asked him to leave. No, she should have wanted him to leave. After selling my last ticket and turning over the sign, I exited through the box office door, locked it behind me, and went into the lobby to help Hannah clean up. To ask about Bryce. "Why do you think that girl ran out of here like that?" I asked. Hannah stopped wiping the counter and looked me straight in the eye.
"I know who he is, Clay. I know what he's like, believe me.
I know, I said. I looked down and touched a carpet stain with the toe of my shoe. I was just wondering, then, why you'd keep talking to him. She didn't answer. Not right away. But I couldn't raise my eyes to face her. I didn't want to see a look of disappointment or frustration in her eyes. I didn't want to see those kinds of emotions directed at me. Eventually, she said the words that ran through my mind the rest of that night. You don't need to watch out for me, Clay. But I did, Hannah. And I wanted to. I could have helped you. But when I tried, you pushed me away. I can almost hear Hannah's voice speaking my next thought for me. Then why didn't you try harder? Cassette 4, Side A. On my way back, the red hand flashes, but I run through the crosswalk anyway. The parking lot holds even fewer cars than before, but still, no moms. A few doors down from Rosie's diner, I stop running. I lean my back against a pet store window, trying to catch my breath. Then I lean forward, hands on my knees, hoping to slow everything down before she arrives. Impossible. Because even though my legs stopped running, my mind keeps going. I let myself slide down against the cold glass, knees bent, trying so hard to hold back tears. But time's running out. She'll be here soon. Drawing in a full breath, I push myself up, walk over to Rosie's, and pull open the door. Warm air rushes out, smelling like a mixture of hamburger grease and sugar. Inside, three of the five booths along the wall are taken. One with a boy and a girl drinking milkshakes and munching popcorn from the Crestmont. The other two are filled with students studying. Textbooks cover the tabletops, leaving just enough room for drinks and a couple of baskets of fries. Thankfully, the booth farthest back is occupied. It's not a question I need to consider, whether to sit there or not. Taped to one of the pinball machines is a hand-scribbled out-of-order sign. A senior I sort of recognize stands in front of the other machine, banging away. As Hannah suggested, I sit at the empty counter. Behind the counter, a man in a white apron sorts silverware into two plastic tubs. He gives me a nod. Whenever you're ready. I slide a menu out from between two silver napkin holders. The front of the menu tells a lengthy story about Rosie's, with black and white photos spanning the last four decades. I flip it over, but nothing on the menu looks good to me. Not now. 15 minutes. That's how long Hannah said to wait. 15 minutes, and then I should order. Something was wrong when Mom called. Something was wrong with me, and I know she heard it in my voice. But on her way over, will she listen to the tapes to find out why? I am such an idiot. I should have told her I would go get them, but I didn't do that, so now I have to wait and find out. The boy who was eating popcorn asks for a key to the bathroom. The man behind the counter points to the wall. Two keys hang from brass hooks. One key has a blue plastic dog attached to it, the other a pink elephant. He grabs the blue dog and heads down the hall. After storing the plastic tubs beneath the counter, the man unscrews the tops to a dozen salt and pepper shakers, paying no attention to me. And that's fine. Did you order yet? I swivel around. Mom sits on the stool next to me and pulls out a menu. Beside her, on the counter, is Hannah's shoebox. Are you staying? I ask. If she stays, we can talk. I don't mind. It would be nice to free my thoughts for a while. To take a break. She looks me in the eyes and smiles. Then she places a hand over her stomach and forces her smile into a frown. That's a bad idea, I think. You're not fat, Mom. She slides the box of tapes over to me. Where's your friend? Weren't you working with someone? Right, a school project. He had to... he's in the bathroom. Her eyes look past me, over my shoulder, for just a second. And I might be wrong, but I think she checked to see if both keys were hanging on the wall. Thank God they weren't. Did you bring enough money? She asks. For something to eat. She replaces her menu, then taps her fingernail against my menu. The chocolate malteds are to die for. You've eaten here? I'm a little surprised. I've never seen adults in Rosie's before. Mom laughs. She places a hand on top of my head and uses her thumb to smooth out the wrinkles on my forehead. Don't look so amazed, Clay. This place has been around forever. She pulls out a $10 bill and lays it on top of the shoebox. Have what you want, but have a malted shake for me. When she stands, the bathroom door squeaks open. I turn my head and watch the guy rehang the blue dog key. He apologizes to his girlfriend for taking so long and kisses her on the forehead before sitting down. "Clay?" Mom says. Before turning back around, I shut my eyes for just a moment and breathe. "Yes?" She forces a smile. "Don't be out long." But it's a hurt smile. 4 tapes remain, 7 stories, and still, where is my name? I look into her eyes. It might be a while. Then I look down at the menu. It's a school project. She says nothing, but from the corner of my eye, I can see her standing there. She lifts a hand. I close my eyes and feel her fingers touch the top of my head, then slide down to the back of my neck. "Be careful," she says. I nod, and she leaves. I take the top off the shoebox and unroll the bubble wrap. The tapes haven't been touched. I press play.
Everyone's favorite class. Okay, everyone's favorite required class is peer communications. It's kind of the non-elective elective. Everyone would take it even if it wasn't required because it's such an easy A.
And most of the time it's fun. I'd take it just for that.
There's very little homework, and don't forget the bonus points for class participation. I mean, they encourage you to yell out in class. What's not to like?
Reaching down, I grab my backpack and lift it onto the stool where Mom sat only moments ago.
After feeling more and more like an outcast, peer communications was my safe haven at school. Whenever I walked into that room, I felt like throwing open my arms and shouting, "Ollie, Ollie, oxen free!"
I roll the 3 tapes I've already heard into the bubble wrap and place them back in the shoebox. Finished. Done.
For 1 period each day, you were not allowed to touch me or snicker behind my back, no matter what the latest rumor. Mrs. Bradley did not appreciate people who snickered.
I unzip the largest pocket of my backpack and stow Hannah's shoebox inside it.
That was rule number 1. Day number 1. If anyone snickered at what anyone else said, they owed Mrs. Bradley a Snickers bar. And if it was an extremely rude snicker, you owed her a king size.
On the counter, sitting beside the Walkman and a chocolate malted shake in honor of Mom, are the next 3 tapes.
And everyone paid up without argument. That's the kind of respect people had for Mrs. Bradley. No one accused her of picking on them, because she never did. If she said you snickered, you did. And you knew it. The next day, there would be a Snickers bar waiting on her desk. And if there wasn't, I don't know. There always was.
I gather the next 2 tapes, blue nail polish labeling them 9 and 10, 11 and 12, and hide them in my inside jacket pocket.
Mrs. Bradley said peer communications was her favorite class to teach, or moderate, as she called it. Each day, we had a brief reading assignment full of statistics and real-world examples. Then, we discussed.
The last tape, the 7th tape, has a 13 on one side but nothing on the reverse. I slip this tape into the back pocket of my jeans.
Bullies, drugs, self-image, relationships, everything was fair game in peer communications, which, of course, made a lot of other teachers upset. It was a waste of time, they said. They wanted to teach us cold, hard facts. They understood cold, hard facts.